Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back to the IT Babble podcast, episode 150 in your face. Here we go. It's not just Patrick, and it's not just Tony. We also have a third guest. Who is our mystery guest?
I believe his name is Omar.
Oh, Omar.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, Omar is back on the mic. That's awesome. That is awesome. Omar.
The groundhog saw its shadow.
Omar gets a podcast. That's awesome.
Yep. Nice. If the groundhog sees his shadow, Omar does a podcast.
And let me tell you, people out there who are listening, it is difficult. It's damn difficult to get three people on three major different time zones together. It's not
really, really difficult.
It's 9 a.m. for me. It's, what, 10 p.m. for you, Tony?
Yes, 10 p.m.
And Omar just got back from school, so what is it, like 4 or 5?
Five.
Oh, my gosh. It's tough, people. It's tough, but we made it happen because we are delivering a superior product. That's it. That's all there is to it. Whew, episode 150. Guys, what's everybody been up to? Tony, what have you been up to? We'll start there.
We just finished like our first report cards ever since we, as I keep telling people, just opened. And everyone's like, what do you mean? It's like your second year? I'm like, no, just opened means we just started our school. So we just finished our report cards. And I don't know, like no one said anything after all the report cards went live. And I know that that doesn't make any sense. So I'm just waiting for like a group of parents to show up with like torches and threaten to burn the school down.
Awesome. Awesome. Tony, Omar, what have you been up to? We haven't heard from you in a while.
New campus, lots of new administrators. I'm also doing student government and basically running around like a chicken with its head cut off. So, that's been my year.
Awesome. That's awesome. And me, I've not been doing too much, kind of taking long naps, you know, dreaming of beaches.
The beaches in Indiana.
Yeah, the beaches in Indiana. Apparently there are some, but I guess there anyway. I've been busy trying to put together projects for spring break and trying to get our end of year and summer projects in line because we've got some big ones that we're going to be doing. So I've been kind of working on that. Anyway, we have got a fantastic agenda. It's a large one. I don't know if we'll get through everything, but we'll try. We're going to talk about one-to-one programs in school, mobile devices versus a laptop, which should be an easy one. Eye strain, because we're so connected, we're on our devices all the time. Handwriting, should we continue to focus on it, or should it go the way of the dinosaur? We've talked about it before. It's been a few years. I think it'll be good to revisit it. But of course, we're going to start off with social media in schools. There's a whole lot of things here, as you will see in the show notes. I saw this YouTube video from Eduro Learning. They're a consulting company, but they're made up of international school teachers. And so Tony, I'm sure some of these people are actually on our tech director Ning. We know some of these people, and they were talking about, and it was an interesting conversation. I put the link to it. Don't go to Eduro's website because the link they have, I believe, is wrong. I actually had to go and find it on YouTube. So it was interesting. It's really kind of interesting. And they are all for it, that it has to be used. And of course, they're in different countries. So people in China, it's impossible not to use WeChat. It's just impossible. So you have to use it.
Yeah, it's almost completely impossible.
And South Korea, are they doing Line or is it?
South Koreans mostly use their KakaoTalk, but like,
yeah.
It's nothing compared to WeChat. Like if you had WeChat, like when I was in Shanghai, I used WeChat like for everything. Like I didn't even want to, but it got to a point where I couldn't even go to certain stores and pay for things unless I had WeChat Pay. Because they can process payments without paying a fee, like a card fee. And then I was a big fan of the city bike system, the shared bikes, and I had to use a combination of WeChat and like an app to do that. And yeah, so it also like the other thing with WeChat, which it's hard to explain to people, is WeChat is built on a business API. It is a e-commerce platform. And if you're a business, you can build a full e-commerce system, and your customers never use the internet. They just use the WeChat platform. And that's huge. And I don't even think anything like that exists in the United States. Not
No, not
really.
that I know of. I'm sorry, Omar. What is a big social media app in Dubai? I mean, Dubai's tons of different cultures there, so is there one
Well, I
dominant
mean,
thing?
No, I think, you have WhatsApp is a big one. In the Arab world, most everybody uses WhatsApp. But I think the key here, I think we need to look at the difference between instant messaging and social media. I think there we have to make a different like differentiate the two, because I was thinking like way back in the day when nobody had mobile devices and we were all on our PCs and we had the MSN Messenger and we had ICQ. I mean, those were instant messaging applications. I think it makes a big difference between that and social media, because I think social media is a way to connect people, and a lot of the social media apps have these features that almost make the application addictive, and I think that's the big issue. It's not that the application allows people to message one another. I think it goes deeper than that. So that's just my take on that.
Oh, interesting. And social media, people have been trying to shoehorn this into education for a very, very, very ever since it's been out there. They're like, the kids are on it, we're on it. Why not just, you know? So, do you think, well, first off, let's go back. Should social media be used in school for anything?
No.
Well, I guess not for
No.
not when it
Yeah,
comes to
no.
the students, right? It
Not
should be no.
not anymore. Not anymore. Like initially, maybe, but not anymore. I think the evidence is clear. I think it's the apps and the content have been engineered just to make like an addictive feedback loop. And there's no, I don't see even, and this is what hit me like a few weeks ago when I was talking to a kid who I checked his internet usage and calculated that he had done like over 2,000 page views on Facebook in like a day. And just based on like average size, okay, this was just rough math. I could be wrong, but it was a lot. And I asked him if he remembered anything that he participated in that day on Facebook, and he couldn't recall a single thing. So that's bad. Like what, I mean, Omar's right. If I was just using it for chat, I'd be like, oh yeah, like today, like I was in math class and I was like chatting with my friend 'cause like we're doing something later this weekend, or I was working on a paper, or there was this really funny movie we watched. There would be some context and content and we would be having a conversation. I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing any deep interaction.
I think you nailed it right there, and because I have a 9-year-old daughter, and we're trying to kind of introduce her to the idea of social media slowly, because I know that it's just I feel like as a parent we need to introduce her to it and kind of teach her the right and wrong ways to use it, because eventually she is going to be using it, and we'd rather she gets introduced to it with us. And we've noticed, my wife and I have noticed, that her interactions are very self-absorbed, so to speak, and all of her friends are essentially not, they're not having a conversation like Tony said. They're talking at their friends, and they're only waiting to see who responds with a like or a thumbs up. So it's almost like all about self-validation, as opposed to having a meaningful conversation. And I think that's part, that's another part of the danger, is that a lot of these kids are using it earlier and earlier, and they're building their self-esteem and getting validation, or trying to get validation, using this social media. And it can be very counterproductive, especially when many parents don't even realize what their kids are doing, and don't set controls like I have with my wife.
Okay. Well, let me.
I'm not controlling my wife, by the way. That sounded wrong.
Yeah, she would end you. She would end you. So let me say this. So maybe schools need to step in and teach students how to be, proper etiquette. Then, you know, I mean, saying, hey, you know, this is how you talk, and you have to be able to read and try to internalize what that person's saying. You know, don't just talk at a person, because that's not how you talk to that person when they're in front of you. I mean, maybe school should step in and teach that. Like, you know, when you're on social media and what you write on there it might be just like a joke or something, but somebody might not be able to interpret it as a joke. I mean, do you think schools should step in and make some sort of a curriculum, or maybe some sort of character building program that includes social media?
Well, I think so. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with social media per se. I think it's just teaching kids how to have conversations on different platforms. Because I mean, I know that when we did our career week with our 10th graders, we did several sessions with them on how to email potential what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. I don't know.
They're trying to get what is it? Temporary jobs.
Part-time jobs.
Internships. Sorry.
Yes, we all have master's degrees.
Complete brain fart. So we did a lot of sessions where we were kind of walking them through the process of emailing the companies that they wanted internships with, and a lot of the kids did not know how to draft a professional email. Yet these are kids who their parents consider them, oh, they're so tech savvy because they're Snapchatting and
they're digital natives.
Nobody's business. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's all about how to use these platforms productively. And I don't see why it couldn't be part of, let's say, an English class or a history class or whatever, you know.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. I got some thoughts.
No, I was pretty much done. I was just thinking that you don't have to integrate it forcefully. I think if it makes sense in that context, then great. But I think it's more about teaching kids how to use platforms responsibly and productively.
So Ajiro learning video, there was a director of technology from Japan. Was he in Nagasaki? I can't remember. Anyway, he brought a bunch of high school students together, and he said, okay, social media. He goes, I'm not judging. I'm just fact-finding here. He goes, and he just had like a chart up there, like Facebook, Snapchat, Line, so on and so on. And he goes, I just want you guys to, you know, put a check mark, or put like, you know, a tally mark. Which one do you use? And he found out that a lot of students, you know, may have had accounts for all of those, but they had multiple accounts for all of those. So they might have two Facebook accounts. And and they said, well, one is just for my friends. The username doesn't even reflect me at all. It's like a fake account. It's a complete fake account. And the other one is for like my public perception. So for universities who look at Facebook and social media, that's what they'll see. They won't see this other one where it's me acting like a big jabroni. They'll see this one where I'm doing community service and I'm involved in my school and all this other stuff. I thought that was kind of interesting that the kids are like, okay, I worry that we're teaching them how to market themselves as just a commodity. And I also worry that when we're talking about etiquette, that we'll forget about ethics, and we'll I think that schools can very easily cross a line and say you know, Tony is typing away.
I can stop. I'm just like making some notes
and telling people, you know, I'm just worried that schools will, that this will, it's a slippery slope, because I think schools could start telling people what to think, you know, and like take something that's very controversial right now in the States is gun control, right? It might seem to a layman as a very black and white situation, but due to the Constitution and guns being protected under the Constitution, which is very, very difficult to change. It can be changed, but it's very, very difficult. Laws have to make sure that they do not violate the Constitution. And so it's very, 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 very tricky. We had schools all around America had this March 14th, they had this walkout, and our school did it as well. But the focus of it for our school was not political. It was not about gun control. It was about honoring the 17 students who lost their life. That was it. That was all it was. And then a chance for students to kind of talk about it and how it impacted them. That's all we did. We made it very unpolitical. But when you watch the news made it very political. And they said they walked out for gun control. But I'm just worried that if we're teaching people social media and etiquette, that they will say, by the way, like, how would I respond to this? Like, students will bring this up as a question, and some teachers could let their personal views get in there and be like, well, guns are bad, so you need to be against it. Or, you know, guns are protected by the Constitution, so there really is no conversation here. It's very tricky. I think schools could mess this up and could make things much, much worse. I don't know, guys. I don't have an easy answer for this one. I wish I did.
You know how I feel about it. I mean, I put my post up today because I was reviewing network security again, and I just got so frustrated. I mean, the parents enable it, but the parents also have like a valid argument, because there's so many things students are involved in after school, and almost all of these things require some kind of like logistics, and so they have to be able to talk to their kids after school. So if they're commuting around, they do need phones. And then parents are also worried in big cities, like, you know, I was working in Shanghai, if anything can happen, your kid needs a way to like call for help or whatever. And
yeah,
I think it's, unfortunately, the status quo is like, oh, we don't have to provide like any kind of method for students to make phone calls, because, you know, they all have cell phones, which is bad, but that's happening.
Yep.
So, and then I was just thinking about it, like, how does this like student even have a Facebook account? What do you have to do right now, Patrick, if you want to make a new Facebook account as an adult? What do you think? Gmail account or anything?
You have to give a birth date. You have to give your birth date.
Okay.
You have to be more than 13 years old. I think you have to give, I don't know. Do you have to give a real name? Do they want you to give a real name?
I think you also need a phone number.
Well, the last time I tried to make a Gmail account for somebody, it asked me for like all of that plus a phone number to send a text message to validate that who I am.
Good call, Omar.
So a lot, right? And I think that's pretty standard. So my question is, They're saying if you're an adult, you have to have a phone number and an email address, and basically it's like a multi-step authentication system to prove you are who you are. But if you're a kid, you can have a phone that your parents gave you, and that somehow means that you're validated. It's not in your name. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole point of the verification. So, and then you're right. Kids have like multiple accounts. Well, how is that possible? Facebook says that. Not just Facebook, but all these services are like, no, if we find that you have a duplicate account, you know, we'll suspend your account.
Yeah.
And I'm just like they're not really doing any of this.
No, they're
You know,
not.
they're not. So they're not doing any due diligence at all. And I know kids under 13, right, who have Facebook accounts.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I know 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds who have accounts on these social media platforms, and it's like
I thought the algos would be smart enough to detect postings that clearly show like 80 kids who are friends all at like a middle school.
Well,
Or
and all their conversations are just littered with emojis. If they respond with 17 emojis, then you know that they're under 15.
Right.
Under 13.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And then what another reason is I understand that people want to be connected, but there's this the FOMO, the fear of missing out. And there's this other thing out there called JOMO, the joy of missing out. And I don't know if anybody needs to be so connected and watching certain issues. It's like watching a major event on CNN News, you know, because what they'll do is they don't have any new information. And so they just keep showing and sharing all the information they have over and over and over again, talking themselves in circles until something new comes out. And then they break it. And then they talk about that over and over and over in circles. I mean, they all do it, Fox. It's just terrible. It's so boring. I don't know. Maybe we just don't need maybe make social media, you know, 18 or older, you know, and you have to have a proof that you're
Yeah.
18 and older. I don't know, birth certificate, a driver's license,
I think that's how it should be. If you're gonna create things that are kind of addictive, if our standard is 18 years old for making adult choices, then that's what it should be. And if you can prove it's addictive, then maybe it needs to be 21 and over in the United States. I don't know. But it doesn't, you know, and this doesn't have to be international. When I was writing my post, I was literally saying that we should look at like regulation. It could be at the state level, city level, whatever. I mean, school districts could do it if they
Yeah.
wanted to. They could large school districts could put these demands on social media companies. But you know, all the students I've ever been around, their social network, they're the students, the majority of them, like 90%. Our students they're in school with. They're
Yeah.
not like
Yeah.
in another country and this is the only way they can talk. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, all my friends are in Hawaii and I'm in Korea. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, and I think the big thing is I think I've never heard of JOMO because honestly I can't think of any kid, at least that I know of, who is going to think in those terms. Everything revolves around FOMO and the fear of missing out. And I think because the kids use the social media as another way to self-validate, you know, because that's the whole like that's one of the biggest parts of adolescence is kind of trying to figure yourself out and where you stand in the social structure. And social media has just given kids that many more outlets and avenues to do it and to feel well, and in some cases they feel better about themselves when they get enough likes and thumbs ups, but in most situations they're actually stressing out because they're feeling like they're not getting enough likes and comments or positivity from it. And I think
That's
that's
true.
also part of the danger.
Yeah. And there was a study not too long ago, and Tony and I talked about it on an earlier podcast, and I linked to it here. It's in that Gizmodo article, and where it says, study being a teen sucks now. But what they found is that kids, you know, who were younger and in middle school age, and early high school, that the anxiety really builds and getting all the likes, that's super important. But by the time they exit high school, by the time they graduate, that they're able to handle that and realize and able to compartmentalize that and be like, okay, well, that's not, I don't need 50 likes on this post because who cares? I just put it out there to put it out there.
Right. Right.
It's kind of, it's like, yeah, that anxiety spikes, but then they learn how to, just through maturing, I guess, how to deal with it, and then it levels off. So, even though that.
Did we have this kind of problem when pagers came out?
Were there, I mean, kids? We there there were I think yeah, I mean, I think these problems have been building for a while, but you're right though. Initially, everything was just about communication. It wasn't about, and people had to use words. They had, like, if your pager went off, you had to make a phone call, you had to speak to somebody. And now it's just like, somehow with the way these systems are set up, there's no real communication.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you an example. We use social media for one of our student government groups, and we honestly at some point in time, I almost give up on the conversation because the kids are posting messages so quickly that I would literally have to keep scrolling back to keep up with the conversation, because there's, you know, within a minute or two, there's like 30 or 40 messages from different people, and there's almost no way to keep, you know, keep up with that. And I don't know if the kids even can keep up with it, or are they just looking at the messages from the friends or the ones that somehow relate to them? Because
And I think that they're just like literally reading the most recent message. So like even threaded, I mean, that was like awesome, right? Asynchronous means we can post a bunch of stuff and you can check it later. They're not even doing that. It's like the most recent thing, you know. I'll post something at Edmodo and tell the kids, like, you got to check it. And, you know, the assignment's open, and it's open for like 2 weeks, and the project's due in 2 weeks. And they'll come in and be like, what are we doing today? I'm like, what do you mean? It's in the Edmodo thread. And they're like, well, we didn't get a posting today. And this is new. Like, this is new. This wouldn't have happened a couple of years ago. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not going to tell you every day. It's got the due date in it. You've got to do it.
Very, very interesting stuff. We'll definitely keep talking about this over and over again, because it's such a big deal. But I think, do we want to add any parting thoughts for this topic before we move on, or should we just jump into the one-to-one questions?
Go ahead, Omar. I just wrote a post about it, so people can read my post, and if they're curious, and I know Patrick's wrote some, so.
Yeah, and the post is in, you can find the link in the show notes, people. So, Omar?
You know, my just concluding thoughts on it are that I think we do need to help the kids kind of navigate the landscape and learn how to use maybe these things a little bit more productively. And we're constantly teaching kids how to, use these tools with proper etiquette, proper language, et cetera. And unlike QR codes, we do need to have the discussion in schools, because I also think that you have the idea of bullying and how social media can
exacerbate.
Yeah. I'm not on the ball today.
Exasperate.
Yeah. Make it worse.
That's a t-shirt.
Language. Yeah, so that's my 2 cents.
All right, very cool. Very cool. All right, so we'll move on here. And one-to-one programs in schools. This was something I saw on Adjiro Learning, and I figured, I don't know. But if you're building a one-to-one program, do you do mobile devices versus laptop? And a sub question, is a Chromebook a mobile device? So I'm going to jump in here, and I'm going to say it depends on if you're doing one-to-one. It kind of depends on what division. Are you doing high school? Or are you making like a one? Maybe you have a one-to-one program for your elementary school, but it's not true one-to-one. You just have enough devices for one-to-one, and they're just on carts, or they're in workstations around the school. And I think for elementary school, I think a mobile device like an iPad, and I guess a Chromebook is a mobile device. It's not a full operating system. What do you guys think about that? Is Chromebook a laptop or a mobile device? How would you characterize
it? I don't know. It is in the middle. When kids, like what we're doing right now, is if you have to send your Apple BYOD laptop in, the school gives you a Chromebook till it comes back. And that seems to fulfill most of the needs that the kids have. If I were to give them an iPad, they couldn't even use the ebooks that we subscribe to for them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah. We have that problem.
So
with some ebooks.
I think it's definitely better than an iPad, but you're right. I mean, it's not the same as like having a full computer.
I mean, I've seen some arguments here. People are saying, well, kids are on their phones so much and they all have smartphones. Shouldn't that be what we're teaching them? Isn't that what they're going to be using in the workplace? And isn't that what they're going to be using, you know, and beyond? And what do you guys have to say about that particular argument that, yeah, we don't need full laptops in high school or they can just, that's where the future is going to be. The future is going to be on the mobile device. What do you guys say? Like learning Windows or Mac OS or that version of Word and is silly.
Well, I think mobile devices are just that. They're mobile, right? And you can put it in your pocket and you can go around and maybe get some, check messages and maybe respond to very important messages or time sensitive messages. But I think a laptop lends itself to much more productivity and control over your workflow and the different tasks that you're doing. You have a much larger screen as well. I think that kind of relates to the eye strain topic, which we may or may not get to. But when you have a larger screen, you can more easily read the text. You're not squinting. You're probably going to have an easier time reading it in different lighting setups. And I think you probably have a little bit more control on dimming it or adjusting various settings so that you can comfortably read and work. And you can use, you can have a window on the right side and a window on the left side to be able to, work productively. So I think, mobile devices, especially, the smaller ones, I think they're great for smaller tasks or an application that a kid might be using for a much shorter time for a very specific task. But laptops are much more
powerful.
Versatile.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
Yeah, I also think that, my prediction is that we can move away from the laptop as soon as we have some type of viable low-profile VR system, which allows people to somehow have that large screen in front of them, without being so obtrusive. And then secondly, battery life has got to improve drastically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Without question.
Until those two things happen, if you get on your phone and install a Google Drive app and try to do, try to work on something that's got an A4 format and then try to work on something that might have a large landscape format. I mean, it's not really viable. And, I'm in the heart of the massive crazy screens in China. I had an employee and he had a phone that was like, I swear it was like 9 or 10 inches long. It was huge. I mean, when he put it to his head to speak, you couldn't even see the side of his face. And it still wasn't good enough,
But yeah. That's the funny thing is, if you look at people's desktop setups, whether you're a gamer or not, whether you're, into movie editing or whatever you might be into, the monitors are getting bigger and bigger and flatter and flatter. The whole idea, people are wanting these multi-screen setups because that's, allows you to, place applications on different screens, and you have all of this flexibility with a multi-screen setup or with a large screen. And then you look at like Tony, you were saying, phones. Initially, we were making phones smaller and smaller, but then people were like, no, we need bigger screens because we're watching videos and we're doing all of this stuff on these phones. And the phones started getting bigger and bigger and bigger because screen size is important. Size matters when it comes to screens. And Yeah, and I think it's funny because yeah, the larger the screen, the more flexibility you have, especially if you're doing something like movie editing or Photoshop, and things like that, you need to be able to have a larger screen and be able to have that real estate.
Well, I just I'm very interested in the Remix OS, which is pretty much like you plug your phone into a screen and it's all of a sudden you have this desktop experience. And the Samsung DeX, which also creates a desktop experience for a Samsung S8 and S9. I don't know if they do it for the S7,
I've
but.
seen those in the store here in Korea. They do actually look pretty cool. It's kind of strange though. I mean, in the store, when I was in the store and you plug everything in, it works pretty quickly. But I mean, it still doesn't have the processing speed like in the multitasking that you have.
Yeah.
So
Well, it seems like that's kind of a direction that a lot of people are going, and there's always people have been talking about the merger of iOS and macOS for Apple for years, and it seems to be getting closer and closer when you take a look at the iPad Pro, for example, as a big step in that direction. So I don't know. I think I would love for it to be it, but you guys are absolutely right. It just doesn't have the processing power. Can it run? Here's my litmus test. Can it run Photoshop? And if it's not,
it,
right.
yeah.
I'm gonna make a prediction. I'm gonna be bold and make a
Oh.
prediction. So I think eventually, maybe 10, 15 years down the line, and I think we've already seen kind of the beginnings of this, but essentially, you're going to end up with modular devices. And you will have a device that is probably the size of, I don't know, a deck of cards with incredible computing power that you can connect a thin, small battery to and maybe a small screen to take it on the go as a phone. But then when you get to your office, maybe you connect the AC adapter to it so that you can plug it into the wall and then plug in like the HDMI connector to it so that you can plug in a monitor, and you'll eventually be able to kind of have that one device that you can use on the go or in place or stationary,
That would be awesome.
whatever.
That would be awesome. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, do we have time for eye strain, or what do you guys think? What do you think? Let me check our
Yeah,
time here.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got time. We've only been recording here for about 37 minutes. We're good. We got time. We might be able to get through all of them. So eye strain, because people, not just for kids here, but just people in general are on their devices so much. And I know that what all of us do is we do look at a screen a lot of the day, for long periods of time. And Omar and Tony, you guys both have glasses. I'm lucky I don't have any yet, but it may come in time. But
You got Hawkeyes, man.
I got some good ones, but
I envy
they're not what
you.
they were.
Hold on. I'm knocking on wood.
Thank you. So, dude, is this a concern? Is it, eye strain? Because we are, and I think Omar, this was your topic, right? I think you put this on the agenda. You wanna run with this one real quick?
I mean, I'll be honest, like it. My eyesight has never been great by any means. But in the past 2 years, 2, 3 years, probably 2 years, I've noticed that my eyes are a lot more tired. Because and it doesn't help that I'm an IT teacher. So I'm at the computer most of the day, and when I'm helping kids, I'm helping them on their laptops, and I'm looking at their code, or I'm looking at the videos that they're producing on their laptops. And I'm giving them feedback, and then I come home, and then I, watch Netflix, and most of my entertainment and all of the hobbies that I have are generally on the screen. So my eyes are getting much more tired. So I'm also very concerned because I know that my daughter also, wears glasses, and now she has an iPad that the school gave her, and they're constantly assigning her homework and things to do on that iPad. And then when she's done with that iPad, she wants to also watch stuff on Netflix or, we let her watch a couple channels on YouTube that we've monitored.
Yeah,
But again,
Logan
it's a
Paul
lot.
is, that's
Oh God,
let me
no.
see what else.
But
Come on, Patrick.
way too much screen
She's gonna
time.
want a taser. Want a
Yeah.
taser. Sorry, sorry.
It's just way too much screen time. And I think that's going to eventually hurt the kids in the long run.
Yeah, like the number of students in China that needed glasses, I've never seen anything like it. It was like 80%,
Yeah.
and in Korea, I'd say it's like 70% already in high school.
In Korea, Tony,
And I don't know if that's.
I'm sorry,
Yeah, go ahead.
sorry, I've just been jumping in Korea because I know the students do it in China. Do they do eye exercises in school? Like literally where they're rubbing their eyes, like somebody is commanding them, okay, rub your eyes this way, look that way.
I don't know. They might in public school. We don't do it in our school.
Okay, all right.
But they might in public school. I could easily, look that up if people are interested. But in China, yeah, we did eye exercises, but it's fluorescent lighting that's not rated correctly plus these screens. It's a problem. And people are like, "What do you mean not rated correctly? You can't just put lights in. You have to earn the right kind."
Yeah.
So,
What? I
and
can't just
I've seen
put.
people put some like decorative lights in libraries that aren't like good for reading. And I'm like, "Oh, they look so nice." I'm like, "Yeah, they're not. Those aren't good. Those are bad.
Turn them off,
Those are
please.
bad."
Hey, Omar, with your
Yeah.
daughter on her iPad, I wonder because this has come up as a concern as well, not just eye strain, but the whole blue light. Like if she uses that at night, does she have difficulty falling asleep sometimes?
Well, yeah. Well, we make sure that she doesn't have screen time at least half an hour before bedtime, because we are concerned with that whole, the effects of blue light. So I think it's one of those things where your eyes aren't built to be staring at a bright screen all day long. And then to top that off, your brain isn't, being done any favors with that blue lighting that's just constantly straining you. And then when you go to bed, that it has those negative impacts of loss of sleep and restless sleep, and I can't remember what else. But yeah, it's definitely a concern.
Very.
So yeah, I mean all of this stuff is important. One thing I can just say to anybody, if you're planning new spaces, look at the requirements for lighting. Don't just base it off of, because you can get a lot of awesome LEDs, and I think that's what's driving a lot of the bad lighting. And they're low cost, they last forever, but you've got to get lighting that is in a certain range of lumens. And you need to make sure that whatever the activity is in the space, that you have the right amount of lighting for what they're doing. And there's plenty of websites you can use and charts you can use to determine that. So if you do that, it helps tremendously. I see students all the time working without light in the room because they think their laptop light is sufficient because it's bright, but
Oh no,
it's not enough.
yeah. You gotta have some other light, or it just hurts. You get tired, like Omar says. Your eyes get tired for sure, for
Yeah, it's a
sure.
balance of screen brightness, and the color of the screen, the light that's being emitted from the screen, and the environmental light. Because if it's completely dark outside, and you have this very bright screen, that's going to wreak havoc on your eyes.
So. What about programs like Efflux out there, which what they do, what Efflux does, people, is that it changes the hue of your screen and makes it kind of more like yellow depending on the time of day. So the later in the day, the more yellow it gets, and it's easier on your eyes. It's not as bright or as shocking, and and in fact, Apple and put in, I think it's called night mode, and it makes it kind of a yellowish and So, I mean, do you think those things are helpful, or should they just put down the device after dinner?
I think the reading mode on Like I had a Xiaomi in China and it had a reading mode, and I actually thought it made a big difference when I was just reading ebooks. And then the Kindle, like I like the way the Kindle does the reading.
Yeah, Kindle's good. And the Kindle, the actual Kindle itself, the device is wonderful because it's e-ink, and so it's not backlit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly. I was just about to say that. I mean, I wonder if we're going to end up with monitors that somehow have that e-ink, and that would solve a lot of problems.
There is a monitor you can buy. I believe it's 24 inches. It is an e-ink monitor. And I saw it because it's ridiculous. It's like $4,000. It's really expensive. It's really expensive. And of course, it's e-ink, so the refresh rate is terrible. You know, I mean, Microsoft Word.
No gaming on that. No gaming on that.
Yeah.
The Daesun.
It looks Korean. $4,000, I'm buying it.
E-ink. I think it's Korean.
It may be. I don't know. Let's see.
I just found it.
Oh, yeah? What's it? Yeah. A Daesung. Yeah, that's it. That's
yeah, Daesung.
Yep. So it wasn't, I said 24 inches. I was way off. It's 13.
No, it's from Beijing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. If you're in China and you work with Chinese students and you see the number of kids who have really bad vision at a really young age, it's really, your argument is either there's a genetic problem within Chinese people that, you know, that's always been there and we just never knew it. They were just always like having vision problems and they didn't know it. Or something's happened in the last couple decades to hurt their vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's gotta be one or the other. And I just tend to think that, you know, when I had a lot of, when we had Asian students like in Dubai before all of them had phones, I don't remember that like a huge percentage of them all having glasses. It seemed normal compared to the rest of the students. But then you go to any school almost. I lived around four public schools as well, so I would see lots of students every day. I mean, and I just, they all seem to have glasses, all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy.
So I do think there's something there.
Well, speaking of eye strain, let's talk about handwriting. How about that for a segue?
Get off my lawn, Patrick. Get off my lawn.
Should handwriting go away, or should we continue to focus on it?
Do you know, I don't know if this is happening in your school, but every time we give iPads out, it takes about 3 months until we get the first request. Can we get styluses for these iPads? Yeah. Okay, so here's the situation. This always happens. iPads go out, and actually the iPad deployment we did in Korea was smart. We did it the right way. I feel like we did it the right way. We chose apps appropriately. We made a process for requesting apps. Apps have to get vetted to make sure that they make sense. But a teacher was like, how can we practice handwriting if we don't have a stylus? And I was like, paper and pencil. And I know that you have like a lifetime supply of that stuff for your department because I've seen the closet. And it happened in China too. It happened in China. We had iPads like that you could check out and it didn't take long. And they're like, we want a stylus. Almost like, for what? They're like, so the kids can practice writing Chinese characters. These are Chinese kids. And I was like, but you have these workbooks the government gives you, literally, so all the kids can learn how to do them properly. And it's like, yeah, I know, but we want to use the iPad. And I was like, but that doesn't make any sense. Just use the paper and pencil.
Just the paper and pencil. And they have special paper for handwriting, too. And just like they do in America, they have special paper for – it's like almost looks like grid paper, I think.
So I don't know, like, where's the disconnect here? Like, why wouldn't a teacher just be like, put your iPads down, we're going to practice handwriting?
I think a lot of people think that handwriting is not important since we can type everything out. But I mean, I can't reference the actual study. Studies have shown that when you take notes on paper, using, you know, paper and pen or paper and pencil, the link is stronger And I guess it makes stronger connections versus if you were, let's say, typing out the notes. So I think it's one of those things where we probably don't want to get rid of handwriting just yet. I don't know exactly why, but
Well,
yeah.
We do a lot. There's a lot of, in my school, there's a lot of projects, and we're a preschool all the way up to grade eight. So we're, no high school students. Most of the 2/3 of the school is, fourth grade or younger. And so they do lots of projects, and a lot of those projects require not typing, but actual creation using their hands. And I used to think that handwriting should go away because I suck at it. I'm terrible. I've got awful handwriting. I hated it. But when I watch them having to manipulate and write and make it legible so people can read it, and I was like, wow, that's actually important. You're not just practicing a cursive A. You're th that's manip that's fine motor skills right there that you're working on, that you're
Exactly.
strengthening. So
Hand-eye dexterity, yeah.
I used to think that take all of the handwriting books and burn them in the yard. That's what I thought, but I guess no, I think I am wrong about this. I think I was wrong. I think it's very important. Either that
Yeah, I
or
think
go ahead.
it's not only good for dexterity and helping children connect to language, but it's basically free to do. Like it is something that anyone can work on. And if you really want to get into it, have your small children learn to write different alphabets. Like you don't have to like make confuse them. Just say, hey, let's practice doing some Chinese, let's practice doing some Japanese, some Korean, some Cyrillic, like maybe just as like a drawing activity. But then as they get older, they might develop an interest in these languages. It might be a way to connect them like as an interest. But yeah, it's a free activity. And I'm one of these people. I'm not pro technology really below, like really below grade four. Like I'll support, I have to do whatever. Like sometimes I don't get to choose. I'm working in a curriculum now that has technology from like officially from pre-K up, but really it's just from kindergarten up. And they have some people doing really good, interesting things in kindergarten to like grade two. But if it were just my choice, I would say no technology until like grade four, and everything else is building up to it. Like I just would be like, no computers, no iPads. Let's get all the other stuff, there first. Let's work on the dexterity. Let's work on the creativity, the art, the music, all of that. And introduce technology after they have some exposure to things that are interesting to them. So when you ask them to work on a project, they have an idea. So that's just like my personal feelings. But I know a lot of schools, it's really competitive. There's a lot of schools with young children and parents are sending them there because they have IT programs. But that doesn't mean that you abandon your like core skills, because I don't think we've really come up with a substitute, right? Until we come up with a substitute for how to train the dexterity, handwriting has always been a part of like training dexterity.
Well, I tell you what we could do is they could start working on cars at an early age, like first grade. Get them a socket wrench and have them slide under the car and change my oil for free.
There you go. Well, like it's interesting because my daughter, again, fourth grader, and she was assigned an iPad, and just recently she was asking, like, can I get a workbook? And it kind of threw us off a little bit. It was like, wait, you want an actual workbook? And she was like, yeah, I'd really like to. Kind of, I miss working in a workbook, and so somehow there something clicked with her that you know what, I'm kind of maybe getting bored or tired of using the iPad for a certain practice work, and she'd prefer to go back to a workbook where she's using a pencil and paper. So that was interesting to us.
That is pretty interesting.
Yeah, maybe we're just not, it's probably, I was just thinking about this. I think we're to blame for some of this. I mean, we should maybe be teaching like the steps. Like, for example, I keep a little notebook to write ideas down in because they just like pop into my head. And one reason I do it is I like to keep them private till I'm till I've worked them out, and I know that once I make them electronic, they're more likely to not be private. So I have like this stage, like first initial notes, and it might have diagrams and stuff, and I'm just kind of drawing it out. Then maybe I write a couple blog posts about it to work the idea out, and then I take it to the next step, you know, using different pieces of software. But it starts with that notebook. So maybe that's like what we're not teaching. And I think if you look at a lot of people, they do that. You know, I was watching a show today and it had an architect on it, and he was walking around talking, and he would just pull out this notebook and start drawing pictures and showing it to people. They're just rough sketches. But I've got a feeling that's how a lot of people actually work, like older people who are probably good at their jobs. They probably work like that. And we're just not teaching that, because we only had paper notes when we were young, so we just do it automatically.
Yeah, I carry a little notebook too, and whenever I go to a meeting, I have my laptop, but my laptop is open just for calendars. That's pretty much it. Just for calendar, and because we talk about dates and reminders and things that involve me, and I will put a reminder on my calendar, and I'll write it down in my notebook. But anything that's, you know, I don't want public like that. Yeah, that's a very good idea. I do it all the time. These little moleskins, I know they're kind of pretentious, but they fit in my pocket.
That's what I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a Star Wars one.
Nice. Yeah. They fit in your pocket. Well, they can take anywhere. They're good.
There's no way. I have a very hard time brainstorming on a laptop, and I need my notebook as well.
Yeah. What about mind maps, Omar? What about mind maps?
Now, I use mind maps to organize, but not to brainstorm. I do a little bit of brainstorming on mind maps, but usually it's with people. But I use mind maps to help organize the thoughts.
I had a school administrator who will go nameless a couple years ago contact me and tell me that they absolutely needed mind mapping software in order to put together their like strategic plan. And I was like, well, you don't have to buy mind mapping software anymore, because nobody buys it, because it's free and you can just do it online. And I sent them some stuff, but I was like, man, this is a bad sign. So, I mean, I think after the age of 18, you're supposed to use flowcharts, right? Am I wrong?
There you go.
That's good. You go.
So, Lucidchart. I do teach my students how to... I teach every student now how to use Lucidchart.
Lucid is great. Lucidchart, Lucidpress.
I love it.
They're good stuff.
And I make them organize their thoughts, and I start with, I want you to tell me, using Lucidcharts, how you order coffee in the like in Starbucks or in a cafe, or how you buy food in McDonald's, something like that. And of course they just put like one block on there, go in and order. I'm like, no. And then we just break it down. And by the time they're done, there's like 18 things, right? All these choices and stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's really good to just get into that, like as young as like middle school. I think they can do it for fun and then use it in high school as a planning tool. I like doing stuff like that. But even with Lucidcharts, one reason I like it, you can sketch stuff out on paper. And then you can load the image in the Lucidchart and then build a chart around it. So you have your like analog mixed in with your digital.
Oh, that's nice.
And it makes a lot more sense. And it's not like a huge, massive landscape poster of bubbles, which I never really bought into. I never really bought into the bubble system of mind maps. Mind maps.
It helps me to organize sometimes. All right. Okay, guys. So
mind maps.
I think we've gone a little long, but I think it was worth it for episode 150. Definitely worth it.
We should do 150 minutes. No, I'm just kidding.
I got basketball to watch, Omar. I got basketball to watch.
Yeah, I do too.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I need to check the bracket.
Okay. Yeah, Kentucky's doing okay. Ohio State lost last night, but that's okay. Anyway, I'm going to wrap things up if you guys are okay with that. For IT Babble episode 150, join us when we hit episode 300. I'm sure it's going to happen. Just stick around. We'll be there. But anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
I'm Omar.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep babbling out there, people.